Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we talk to Commander Denise Spanier from the Minneapolis Naval Operations Support Center, and we take a look at the Twin Cities Honor Flight Network with Jerry Kaiser. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
The Minnesota National Guard is well-equipped to accomplish our missions both domestically and overseas. In order to be prepared for all types of environments and challenges, we train as we operate. Sometimes overlooked, however, is the impact that the training and daily operations we conduct has on the environment. I'm proud to say that for many years, Camp Ripley's Environmental Office has been at the forefront of conservation and stewardship efforts, not only within the state, but the nation. The Environmental Office conducts numerous ongoing studies on wildlife and plants to document the quality of wildlife habitat found at Camp Ripley and to investigate relationships between military activities and sensitive wildlife species. To date, these studies have demonstrated a high degree of compatibility between military activities and wildlife species. For example, while it has long been thought that timber wolves are sensitive to wilderness dwellers unable to adapt to human activity, a radio telemetry study was found that Ripley wolves breed and raise their young relatively close to centers of military activity and are in fact quite adaptable. One of the great success stories of the Camp Ripley Environmental Office is the identification and tracking of the bear population within Camp Ripley Reservation. Through the 20 years of the program, Camp Ripley personnel have been able to identify nuisance bears and also to locate bear dens on the post. This year, as in past years, school groups, journalists, and visitors of all kinds will have the opportunity to visit a bear den on Camp Ripley. They'll see the bear's natural habitat firsthand and get a look inside the Environmental Office's efforts to balance the needs of the military training with environmental stewardship. For more information on the Camp Ripley Environmental Office, as well as the environmental classroom, log on to MinnesotaNationalGuard.org and click on Camp Ripley.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. This week, Commander Denise Spanier joins us. She is the Executive Officer of the Minneapolis Navy Operational Support Center. Commander Spanier, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Commander, I understand you're originally from Minnesota.
Yes, I'm from Kimball, Minnesota.
And newly assigned as the XO.
Yes, I'm very happy to be back in Minnesota, but the weather has been a little bit of a challenge for me again.
Not quite as nice as San Diego?
No, different. I'll just say different.
Okay. I understand you've been in the Navy for 18 years.
Yes, sir.
And you just came back from a recent assignment to Jordan?
Correct. I was assigned as the first naval liaison officer for the Central Command in the country of Jordan.
And what does a naval liaison officer do in a desert country like Jordan?
Well, they have a 2-mile strip of coastline on the Red Sea, very beautiful area. And we would bring ships in probably 3 or 4 a month, probably sometimes less, and did ports of call there because they're down there working on the piracy mission, and it's one of the closer ports for our ships to come into.
So it's a deep water port?
Deep enough. I mean, well, we brought in a lot of the amphibs and frigates. I mean, they always wanted us to bring a carrier, but we would never bring a carrier in there.
I suppose not. Now, Commander, I'm curious, what's the Navy doing in Minnesota? Are they on a barge out in Lake Minnetonka?
Well, we're actually in Lake Superior. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, we used to bring Navy ships into Lake Superior just to so that Minnesotans could see one of our ships. But there's 3 active duty commands in Minnesota. There's the ROTC unit, there's the recruiting command, and then there's my unit, which is the Navy Operational Support Center. And we manage the 700 reservists that are in the Minnesota area. So generally when people leave active duty service and come back to Minnesota, we provide a place for them to come and drill and work and continue their naval service.
I understand some of your reservists are on active duty now and deployed around the world?
Yes, right now we're up to 52, and they're in 6 different countries. They're in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, Guantanamo Bay, and the Horn of Africa.
Can you give us an example of a mission or what they're assigned to while they're deployed, and how many go at a time?
They usually go one at a time, which is very unique to the services, and it offers its own challenges, which I'd like to talk about later with what it is to our families and our sailors. But generally, customs missions, or usually we're supplementing the other services. So usually we're the Navy person in an Army command helping out.
Okay, we're speaking with Commander Denise Spanier, the Executive Officer of the Minneapolis Naval Operational Support Center, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FN. Commander, you said you have some personnel deployed to Iraq. What type of duty would they be there on?
For Iraq, it's hard to say. Sometimes I've seen people go over in specialized billets like Master at Arms, or if they're there supplying computer support if they have that specialty. Usually filling gaps that the other services can't fill. So that's why we're kind of picked out one at a time to fill unique billets.
So what type of active duty units do the reservists support?
Well, over there, like I said, it's mainly the Army units over there. I think our reserve units, we have 20 units that they support in general, which are spread out all over the world as well. You know, when we do our 2 weeks of training when we're not mobilized, then we go to those commands, which are in Japan. There's several units in Japan and England, some local. We have a medical unit. We have a legal unit, a chaplain unit. And so we have the wide gambit of jobs.
So if there's a unit somewhere in the world that needs a specialty, do they come in and say, do you have anyone that can go? Is it kind of like that?
It's done by the big Navy. It's hard to explain how they do it, but usually, you know, if you have the job qualifications, then you're kind of picked. The Navy's trying to do a better job because they'll identify a group of people that they think they're going to mobilize in the next year, and then people can volunteer for what they want, or they can at least start making preparations to go.
So if there's a mission or a deployment coming up, then they look for volunteers from the reservists?
Yeah, that's where they like to start.
And if they don't find them, then they find someone to volunteer.
Yes.
I think I remember how that worked. So I understand that you also supply some honor guards.
Correct. We do military funerals. And last year we did 142 in Minnesota. So usually it'll be retired or active duty Navy, or people who served actually in any time during the Navy will go out and support those funerals. And it's quite a challenge for us because it covers the whole state and even into Iowa and Wisconsin. So it really puts our people on the road a lot trying to honor those who've served.
So how many sailors are on in your honor guard units?
Ooh, we use our reservists for that as well. So we probably have a pool of probably 30 to 40 people that we can kind of pull from, because sometimes it can be quite, you know, several a week that is challenging.
So is your reserve training, is that out by the airport? Where is your facility?
Yes, we're located on the Air Force Reserve Base down on 34th.
And what type of facilities do you have there?
It's not too bad. It's a nice building. It was actually made for the airport to begin with. It has a hangar bay, which we've kind of converted into a gym and used for our own purposes. And then we also have the Marine Reserve units are also stationed with us there.
Terrific. We'll continue our conversation with Commander Denise Spanier after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We have Commander Denise Spanier standing at attention for Anchors Away. She's the Executive Officer of the Minneapolis Naval Operational Support Center. And she's been in the Navy for 18 years and a native of Kimball, Minnesota. Commander, can you tell us about some of the interesting places that you've been stationed in your career?
Oh, yes. I've been really lucky. I mean, I was a recruiter 10 years ago. I'd even be a better recruiter now because I've just been so blessed. My first tour was in Scotland in Europe, so that was just a great experience and a great culture.
Sounds like a tough one.
Yeah, and then I had a tour with the Space Command where I got to work with satellites and intelligence, and I even did a couple months at the Pentagon, and that was just very fascinating. Then I came back here and did recruiting. So, there's still opportunities to come back to your home state and stay in the Navy and do work. I've managed to do that two times now. And then I was supporting a unit out of Japan when I was a reservist. So I did 9 years active duty, and then I was a reservist for six. So I've been on both sides, and now I'm back on active duty. But when I was a reservist, and I got to go to Japan for my 2 weeks of training, and then I also actually did an eight-month tour there helping the Kitty Hawk transfer over to the George Washington, which was very exciting because it was the first time we were bringing a nuclear carrier into Japan. And then, like I said, last year, having the opportunity to go to Jordan and live in a Muslim country, and I have a much greater appreciation for what we have in this country and how women are treated and just the freedoms that we have. And now to have been in San Diego, America's finest, as they say, but that's because the weather is one temperature all year round. But it was a great experience there. And it was very Fleet Concentration Center, which I hadn't been to. So I've been being stationed with the aircraft carriers and the airplanes, and really seeing it all was great. And now to be able to come back to Minnesota and be near my family again has just been a wonderful experience.
Wasn't the recruiting saying something to the effect, join the Navy and see the world?
See the world. And I have to say I have. I've seen a lot of it, and that's not even with the other travels I've done with the Navy. I've been very, very lucky.
The commander, I'm curious, as a naval officer in Jordan, when you were off duty, were there special dress restrictions? Did you have to wear a burqa or something like that?
Not the burqa. Thank goodness. And initially, I was supposed to go to Saudi Arabia, and it would have been like that. Jordan's a little bit more liberal, but you still couldn't wear shorts or skirts, and you had to dress very conservatively. And we weren't allowed to travel by ourselves or go running outside by ourselves because the culture there, Western women aren't looked at very kindly. I think that they think what they see in the movies is how we are in real life. So you had to be especially aware that you just had to be always safe.
Always safe. Now, for all the young ladies listening to us today, how would you characterize being an officer in the United States Navy? Are there challenges for ladies, or they've got to be a lot different than they were when I was in Vietnam?
Yes, I agree. Even when I first joined the Navy, I think it's different. Now I'm going to go out on a limb here because people don't like this, but so people who remember Tailhook, I think ended up being a very good thing for the Navy because we really hit sexual harassment training and equal opportunity. And I think we're ahead of the other services on those issues. And the Navy, you can really go anywhere and be anything. I never thought I'd be a commander in the Navy. I'll have to tell you that I thought I was, I did ROTC, they paid for my college, and I thought that would be it. I'd do my 4 years, and it's just been such an opportunity. And now to lead people and to, have that respect and have people treat you, it's just been such a rewarding experience.
That's terrific. When you were serving as a recruiter, were you able to get both young men and young women involved?
Yes, but I was, at the time, I was a nuke recruiter for nuclear officers, which at that point in time could only be men. So that was kind of a fun job because I recruit here in Minnesota and we'd fly them to San Diego and wine them and dine them and show them the submarines and stuff. So it was a very easy job to recruit to.
You have had some fun seeing the world. Do you know how many reservists have mobilized out of Minnesota since the global war on terrorism began?
Over 500.
500, and they went out as individuals, not as a unit.
Individuals, yes. And there's definitely challenges to that. You see it on the news here, and I think Minnesota is great. They have send-off ceremonies, and, officials come out, and there's big welcome home ceremonies. But when it's just one person, you don't get that. And I think sometimes, especially for reservists, it's hard because you come back and people just want you to start your job again. And especially people I think lately have come back from Afghanistan. You're a different person when you come back from Afghanistan, and people just want you to slide right back into your job, that's been missing you. But hopefully, employers and people are sensitive that these people have new needs, and also for their families. When a unit deploys, then there's a spouse network of people who are going through the same thing. And our sailors just don't have that. Their families are kind of out there on their own. And, we were trying to leverage, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon and programs like that. But we really want to try and do more and try and hope the communities reach out more to these people and the children, because, like I said, the children don't have children going through the same similar circumstances.
Well, there's a whole series of yellow ribbon communities in Minnesota now. That's a phenomenon that's happened over the last few years, and I'm sure those yellow ribbon communities would be happy to help support the sailors and their families. But what else can the communities do to help?
I think, you know, like I know now at my children's school, even doing, you know, programs to send out the, you know, packages to the Middle East and to the sailors there. And, you know, I know that when I went, my school didn't do it for my children. I wish they would, because I think, you know, children are making as big a sacrifice as anybody when their parents are away. So I think if people are just more aware of the support the family needs.
And Commander, we're almost out of time, but what would you say to the young listeners that might be interested in joining the Navy?
The Navy's great opportunities. I mean, I think for women especially, there's just more and more opportunities. They can now drive submarines and they can fly planes and they can do everything, but we do it all in the Navy, and you'll usually be by the ocean, which is always good.
Commander Spanier, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Commander Denise Spanier, the Executive Officer of the Minneapolis Naval Operational Support Center. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. When Jamie Bale hung up her Navy uniform in 2007, she and her camera joined the VFW. Once elected at the post level, she took it upon herself to capture moments that were important to her and share them with others. Soon she was taking pictures at events for the post, district, department, and national VFW events. Her passion for the veteran community grew, and she started the Minnesota Women's Veterans Information Network, creating a website and a monthly meeting spot for women veterans to share their stories. Along the way, she also became a Patriot Guard member. As a volunteer with the Patriot Guard, she found herself holding onto her camera again, taking pictures of the seas of red, white, and blue that lined the way for military families at welcome homes, funerals, and yellow ribbon events. Through all of her service, she says the best feeling she's received was meeting a Gold Star mom a year after attending her son's funeral. Jamie shared her pictures, and the mother was very thankful. Thank you, Jamie, for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring service members all the way home. To learn how you can, like Jamie, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll take a look at Twin Cities Honor Flight Network with Jerry Kaiser. That's right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
We recently attended Veterans Day on the Hill at our state capitol. This was an event where organizations and veterans from across the state came together to energize the legislature on veterans-related issues. Hundreds of veterans and members of the Commander's Task Force, United Veterans Legislative Council, and County Veterans Service Officers spent time at the Capitol in St. Paul to present the official Joint Veterans Legislative Agenda. A resounding message went out thanks to the support and partnership of these strong organizations. Governor Mark Dayton, Senator Mike Perry, Representative Bruce Anderson, and others had an opportunity to address the crowds and express their support for Minnesota's veterans, this country's heroes. After the rally, veterans met with their individual legislators. I am pleased not only with this display of unity, but also the number of Minnesotans who showed that they want to be part of the process. The day was well attended and reflected a powerful image of veterans in action. As to the future, I will be focusing on telling our story. We are one of Minnesota's great human resources. Veterans continue to serve and build the framework for our future. We must be ever vigilant in keeping the public fully aware of all that veterans provide to our great state.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelido. You can find out more about Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. This week, Jerry Kaiser joins us. He's the flight director for the Twin Cities Honor Flight Network. Mr. Kaiser, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you very much.
Sir, I understand that you currently serve as an officer of the United Veterans Legislative Council in Minnesota.
That's right. I'm the co-chairman. I've been the chairman, but we switch position every so often.
And their mission?
Well, it's a consortium of veterans and military and auxiliaries that discuss and talk about legislative issues and other things that happen to do with veterans. And we're an effective lobbying force at the state capitol, as we were this morning.
Mr. Kaiser, you're also a Vietnam veteran and the flight director of the Twin Cities Honor Flight Network. Can you briefly explain what an honor flight is?
An honor flight is it was started in 2006, but I got a hold of it in 2008. A fellow from the national organization came and talked to me about starting one, a hub, as they call it, in Minnesota. And it is our goal is this, to take World War II veterans, fly them to Washington, D.C., to see their memorials that talked about their sacrifices and did to them and their families that they made during that time in their life.
And how did you get started doing this?
Well, I'm an old warrior who's been a veteran advocate for the last 15 years, and I have a heart for these people. My father was a World War II hero, both Europe and Japanese Pacific, and he was a retired colonel and passed away on me at age 51, and I was never able to properly honor him. And my mother passed away, too. She was a Red Cross worker in World War II. So this is the way for me to honor my parents, kind of. It's really a way to do this. And then I've adopted all these men and women as my own, and it's a emotional, spiritual, and joyful thing to do.
Now, our World War II veterans are getting a bit older. Do you know how many we have in Minnesota?
Well, in my area, which is a hub of 40 miles from the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport, it's about 4,000. That includes western Wisconsin. And I don't do any advertising. It's mostly word of mouth because I don't want to have 1,000 of them on the waiting list. And they are getting old. I believe there's about 1.8 million of them left in the United States. They're passing at 1,000 a day, depending on what part of the country you're in. And I duly want to get as many as I can as possible there in this area, maybe 1,500. That's about all I can probably do.
How many flights have you done?
I've done five. This doing another one in April 30th, my sixth one. I take 100 veterans each time. With that, we take 58 guardians, as we call them, an attendant, and two videographers, a photographer, and then I go on all the trips. I'm the boots on the ground.
And this is a one-day trip. They leave Minneapolis, go out and see
World War II? Yes, sir. That's 22 hours down and back. We leave at 6:30 in the morning. We get back at 11 at night. And during the whole time, we have all sorts of things that we do. And I'm an old Army guy, so I run it as a three platoons, five squads per platoon, and they watch each other's back, and we have squad leaders, and I make them all private nothings, and I'm the sergeant major. So,
can you briefly walk us through the day? What does that entail for these World War II veterans?
Well, first thing, they're exceedingly excited about this. I don't think this is true. He says, I can't believe you're doing this for free. And I says, that's right, it is. And they're up at 4 in the morning. They get there at 5 o'clock. The military, the Armed Forces Service Center there is great. They have coffee and donuts for them. And we get through the TCA pat downs. They're really working with us on this. They love these guys. We get them. Sun Country Airline is doing my program this time. They have every time, and we love them. They do a great job. We pile them on the aircraft. I heard them like squirrels. You know, they're all kind of nuts, and we try to just hush them along. We get them on the airplane. We're airborne at 06:30. We get them airborne. We talk about different things that's going to happen, and we give them V-mails. You ever heard of that? V-mails, a World War II letter that they would get, and we have their family members and school people make them up, and so that's a surprise. I call it mail call, and they each get one of those. And so on the way there, they're pretty excited. We go into Reagan. This time, I have gone into Dulles before. We go in there, deplane, and as soon as they get there, they get a, because the last flight of a captain in the Air Force or a captain in the airlines, they get a water cannon salute with your aircraft. So they fly, we fly in and they do a water cannon salute, and then we usually have a band there and a group waiting for it. Reagan, I had the Marine Corps orchestra there one time, an Army orchestra there, and we have about 200 or 300 people there greeting them, getting off the airplane. They're totally flabbergasted. We go from there to the Iwo Jima Memorial, Women's Memorial. We go to the World War II Memorial, and after that, we go to the Vietnam. It's just down the way, Korea and Lincoln Memorial. And we get on and off the bus about 7 times. And go have some food. They love the buffet we go to. And then we get back home, have a bigger party for them here. I have Army, Navy, Air Force, cadets, generals of the 34th Infantry Band or the 934th Band play. And then it's a grand time. They cannot believe that this many people is going to come and greet them at 11:30 at night.
So they've had a long day, 4 o'clock in the morning till midnight.
They're wired. They're so happy. One guy says, you know, wife says, he's been so quiet his whole life, I can't shut him up now.
And so you're in trouble with the wife.
No. They cherish this as their last day. Since my last flight, 17 of those men have passed away. They all tell me, their families, it's very emotional.
I'm sure it is. We've been speaking with Jerry Kaiser, the flight director of the Twin Cities Honor Flight Network, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on Newstalk 100.3 FM. We'll continue our conversation with Jerry Kaiser after a short break. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking with Jerry Kaiser, the flight director of the Twin Cities Honor Flight Network. Mr. Kaiser, you've been on a number of these flights. Is there a most memorable moment that comes back to you?
Absolutely. One of the men on this flight was a guy named Ken Porwall. He was a Bataan Death March survivor, was in prison there. They put him on a hell boat. Went to Japan. He was in a coal mine, and he just had a horrendous time. And he was repatriated back to the States, raised a family. I think he had 7 kids, just a wonderful young man. And on this trip, he went, and I asked him after he got back, after we're back at in Minnesota, he was with his son. I says, Ken, what is really the most important thing you liked about this trip? And I was waiting for something very emotional and soul-searching. And he looked at me and says, you know, Jerry, says, what I really liked was that soft-serve ice cream at that last buffet we had, you know. He says, you know, it's the simple things that in life. He says, I didn't get much ice cream there for about 4 years. So he says, I like ice cream.
Leave it to a World War II veteran to bring you to that. I'm looking at a booklet that you've shown me that you put together in one of your flights. You put together a pamphlet. Do each of the veterans get one of these?
Everyone on the plane gets one.
And what all is in there?
It's the biographies of each one of the veterans, where they are, what they did. And we don't put any phone numbers in there. They share. Some of them, they haven't seen each other. Some of them, 60 years, they finally found a buddy or something. You know, they got all sorts of stories about that, too.
Now, if the World War II veterans are interested in signing up for one of these flights, how do they go about that?
Well, they can do it 2 ways. They can go on our website, which is honorflighttwincities.org. That's honorflighttwincities.org. Most of these fellows don't have a computer, so they can call me at 651 481-8835, 651-481-8835. And we'll send me a self-address. I'll give them my address, and we'll send me a self-addressed stamp envelope, and we'll get them an application.
Jerry, this sounds like quite an undertaking that you're doing here, and I believe I heard you say that the World War II veterans don't pay.
That is correct. They earned it, and we have this great country because of them. They conquered the Nazis and destroyed the Japanese empire.
And if the World War II veterans don't play, you've chartered a plane, you've done all these things, you've bought the ice cream. How much does it cost, and how do you pay for that? It
costs about $75,000 per trip. The guardians or attendants, whatever you want to call them, are on the trip. For every two veterans, we have them, one guardian for each two. They pay $500, and the rest of it, the Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity, of which I'm the executive director, we fundraise for that. And that's how it works. And if we run short, we just pay for it ourselves.
And I would guess that the number of trips that you take is going to depend on how good a job you do with your fundraising.
Absolutely. But we have some wonderful vendors out there and people who help us, numerous organizations and philanthropic folks have given us the money. And it's a daunting task, but it gets done, and I plan to do, I like to do three a year, but so far I've only been able to do two, but the first two this year are paid for. I'm working on 2012.
Good for you, sir. That sounds like a long day, but a rewarding day, not just for the World War II vets, but looking at the look on your face when you described it, you enjoy it too.
Well, we take 69 wheelchairs, and I fight one of them to get the wheelchair at the end. I get a little tuckered out.
Get a little tired out. Now, we're just about out of time. How can our listeners help you to afford next year's flights?
Well, you can go onto our website. That's honorflighttwincities.org, and we have a PayPal. You can put a donation, or else you can give us a call, and I'll talk to you about it. You can send us some money.
Jerry, you're doing a fantastic job, and I can just see those veterans out there coming back with big smiles on their face.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us today. That was Jerry Kaiser, the flight director of the Twin Cities Honor Flight Network. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining us is Sergeant First Class Melanie Nelson from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Sergeant Nelson, hello, and what's in the mailbag today?
Hi, Tom. Well, I have a really nice note in the mailbag today. It comes from a woman named Sarah. She says, I have a friend who lives in St. Paul. Your organization recently helped her repair a porch. Thank you for doing that, but that wasn't the most important thing you did. You brought her hope. Isn't that a neat one, Tom?
That's a terrific one.
And, you know, when I got that, I shared it with everyone in the office, and I also put it on our Facebook, and I asked other people to share their stories, and I have two more great ones that came into our Beyond the Yellow Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Facebook account. Can I read those for you?
Please share them with us.
Oh, great. This one is from Patty. She says, the Isanti County Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network came to our house while my husband was in Iraq. My two-year-old son was allergic to dust, and we needed our carpet removed per doctor's orders. They came in and removed it, and there were 14 people here to help. I don't know if they will know how grateful we are. I love the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, she says with a smiley face right after it. And then one other person commented, and she said, this is from Carrie. She said, this is by far one of the best programs out there. Thank you for all your help with my family while I was deployed. Isn't that a neat one?
The Yellow Ribbon communities are really starting to have an impact, aren't they?
They are all around the state. And we love these stories, Tom. We love sharing these stories of success. And as soon as they do come into our office, I share them with our staff, and I share them with the Yellow Ribbon networks that are out there. So they know that their work, their volunteerism is really appreciated.
You're doing a great job, Sergeant Nelson.
Thank you. And if other people want to share their stories, I encourage you to do that on our Facebook page, beyondtheyellowribbon.org, or you can also just email them to me. If you go on the beyondyellowribbon.org website, click on Contact Us, and I'm the Marketing Communications Director. You can email me directly. Email any one of us, and we'll be happy to share your successful stories along to our volunteers.
And our listeners. Thank you, Sergeant Nelson.
Thank you, Tom.
If you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Commander Denise Spanier from the Minneapolis Navy Operational Support Center, Jerry Kaiser doing great work with the Twin Cities Honor Flight Network, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the Yellow Ribbon Community of Duluth and the Red Bulls deployment to Bosnia. That's next Sunday morning at 7 right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. If you have questions for our mailbag or want to check out podcasts of today's show or all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.